Okay. So this is my talk title today is Bringing Your Life to Life, and actually is the theme of a meditation conference that Jane and I and Terry Lewisander and Karen Denmore and Serena Lauren and actually Andrew Ashmore from Coeur d'Alene, we all went to Dr. Joe's follow-up workshop, which is his most advanced training. And so I wanted to share some of our experiences that that happened during that extraordinary weekend. And I rarely indulge in Facebook, but it is my habit every morning to just to check in to see how many likes I've received. I can't help it. I still have a little bit of that egoic kind of desire to feel good enough to the rest of the world. And I noticed that a lot of my colleagues were saying, I got to rewrite my talk today. I can't say what I plan to say. Obviously, needing to speak to what's happening in the world. And I mentioned that to Jane, and she said, well, yeah. So I guess I got the message that I probably should perhaps not necessarily focus on what I had planned to talk about, and instead try to address the elephants in the room, so to speak. So y'all know that Jane and I are a little bit different when it comes to our approach to life and to things, and yet our differences tend to create a kind of superpower between the two of us. It's like we got it all covered, but the way she covers things and the way I cover things is quite different. And so I'm going to let the Spirit speak through me, and it may include some of what I had thought I was going to talk about. Maybe not. So we'll see. But I got to tell you that many, many years ago when my first book, The Eye of the Storm, was first published, I sat with my previous wife, Nan, in the radiation waiting room. She had terminal brain cancer. She was receiving radiation for her illness, a glioblastoma multiforme, one of the most deadly brain cancers around. And we were in the waiting room, and we witnessed the crashing of airplanes into the Twin Towers in that very moment. And I got to tell you, in that very moment, I was more heartbroken over what was happening to my wife. That was filling my being, that while the world was beckoning me to find the horrors of life, you know, acted out in such horrific demonstration of man's inhumanity, and yet I was torn between what I was feeling as a sense of my own loss. And I know that there is this dynamic in the context of all the things that are happening, that it's all about our perspective, where we live in the broader scheme of what's happening in the world, in our world today. Because we can become moved, and indeed should become moved at some of the horrific things that are happening in our world today, but we have to have a kind of context for it all. Because when I look out at the world, I see a lot of other things happening that are equally important. Things like the incarceration of so many minorities and those who have found themselves in a corporate system. Things like 200,000 or 300,000 people die every year in our healthcare system due to malpractice or due to neglect. 50,000 people each year die in car crashes. Opiate epidemic. There's a lot of things we can look at. Pick something, and we'll find ourselves in relationship with the difficulty of being with that aspect of our human journey that has to embrace what all of us find despicable and horrific and awful. And yet, these have been present throughout all of time in all societies, in all times. And we can look to Scripture, and I can hear right now my more fundamentalist colleagues quoting Mark or Matthew, talking about, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, be not troubled, for such things must come. Jesus talking about the end times. But when we recognize that even in biblical times, that there was the prediction of the end of things, or the destruction at that time when that scripture was written, the destruction of the Jewish temple was happening. But the point being is that we need to get to a place where we begin to engage whatever we're having in the context. This is the effect of what happens when we live separate and apart from being connected, not only to our own sense of well-being and worth, but from each other. This is an effect of our sense of not enough. This is an effect of living separate from our sense of wholeness, our sense of well-being. The ills of the world are an effect. And to the degree that we become overwhelmed or entangled in or eclipsed by the effects of life, we succumb to them. We can become overwhelmed by them. We can become sick by them. And so my effort in the presence of these things, I mean, when my book was first published in 2001, right before 9/11, and prior to our invasion of Iraq, you know, I felt compelled to become a peace activist. And I joined a team, and I got to tell you, it was the most difficult thing in the world for me to participate in, because these activists were so angry. And to me, mixing anger with an attempt to try to create a better place, it just doesn't work very well. And I had to quit. I had to quit being a peace activist because they were so angry. And I found myself kind of wondering, you know, what do we have as Unity people? What do we have as New Thought people? As people who are wanting to live in alignment with principle, wanting to acknowledge that there is a reality that is possible of being brought forth when we have the right energetic consciousness that can see the possibilities. And if that effort is not being put towards bringing forth a greater reality, then we get kind of entangled in what's going on, and we make things worse because the incoherence that surrounds us, we become modulated by it. And then we throw all our thoughts and our emotions into an arena that is, in effect, meant to be a kind of chaos unto us. Because absent of being motivated to find a place of peace, find a place of principle, find a foundation within ourselves that can be with this experience and be with it as either hospicing what has to die or midwifing what has to be brought forth. And we can't be in either one of those roles if we're caught up in believing that something is sort of out of order in the context of God's plan of good. So with that said, I'm wanting to share a couple of things that I feel help us understand that the deeper work that Reverend Jane is inviting us to consider. You know, if we find something out there that we are repulsed against, or we find that we can't help but to judge, the deeper work is to forgive it within ourselves, because the true malpractice is to find ourselves critical and not be able to see that part of ourself that is being, that what's happening out there is mirroring. But when we recognize that part of our work is to either be in ho'oponopono with what's going on, you know, I love you, thank you, forgive me, I'm sorry, or we have to be with what's going on out of a sense that it is a mirror to our own sense of separation, or we have to be with what's happening because it's calling us into reconciling our own sense of separation. However we want, however is our context to be with what's going on, we need to understand that there is another invitation. There is another calling that isn't loud, that isn't on TV, that isn't a part of what is the effort now to make sense or make meaning out of what's happening in the world, but rather a calling that's inviting us to take a seat, to be in a part of a community that is holding the consciousness, the vision for a new world to emerge. And to me, I'm wanting to lock into a way of being present to what's going on and being able to be present in such a way as that the coherence within which I feel in the context of me being connected to what's happening in the world is helping to make a difference, not because I'm feeding it, because what's happening is so awful, but because I am an avenue through which the activity of spirit can express itself. Because when I am in my life and I am for whatever it is that life is calling to be for, as opposed to against something that I feel that is an abomination, there is a different energy that is coming forth. I really want to get to some of these other slides. Our first day at Dr. Joe's was a costume party. So for those of you who don't know anything about Dr. Joe Dispenza, he is a Washington State resident, and he is a teacher, is a neuroscientist, and he's basically teaching us meditative techniques with respect to how to connect up to that part of us that's infinite and eternal, that is divine in us. And in the course of this process, he arranges all these activities and these experiences that help drive in that principle. And so the first thing that he asked us to do is to dress up as our future self. Because the recognition is that we cannot change the world. We cannot make a dent in the problems that are happening unless we step out of our current self. In other words, in your own personal life, it's very difficult for us to create any change or improvement if we're not willing to step out of our yesterday self and into a future self that is not tethered to our beliefs, to our judgments, to our insecurities, to our sense of not enough. If we are to create a new and greater experience in our own personal life and have that translate into the betterment of our world, we have to somehow step outside of our yesterday self. Are you following that? Does that make sense at all? Okay. And so the costume party, stepping out as our future self, gives us a sense of we can be anybody that we want. Who is holding us back but ourselves? And as we, here's Dr. Joe, and as we got into that principle, it became evident that part of our being able to really show up and make a difference is somehow we have to leave behind that part of us that is caught up in fear, that part of us that's caught up in separation, that part of us that's caught up in lack. Because it's separation, it's fear, it's lack that's creating what's happening in our world. And until we move towards oneness, towards wholeness, towards a sense of empowerment, then we don't step into that role of being co-creators with God. We become subjugated to the rules, as we talked about in other talks. The idea that we're living by the BS rules of our world as opposed to living by the activity of spirit and its guidance for us. And so as we participated in an event that included over 600 people from all over the world just to be in the same room together to create an energetic field that is so coherent that we would literally step out of ourselves and into a new experience of being that was not tethered to anything in the world or anything connected to our own personal lives, our identities, or time. and get to a place of experiencing a dimension that is equally as real as what's going on in our life, but yet sustained not by what's happening in the world, but what we want to create within ourselves. So I'm going to be showing a couple of movies right now, and we'll have to see how the sound is for this, Brian. I haven't quite checked.
So if you wake up in the morning and you get out of bed on the same exact side as you did the day before, you shut the alarm clock off with the same finger, you slip into your favorite slippers, you shuffle into the bathroom and you use the toilet like you always do, then you walk over to the mirror and you look at yourself to remember who you are, then you get into the shower and you wash yourself in the same routine way, then you groom yourself to look like everybody expects you to look, then you go downstairs and you drink coffee out of your favorite mug. Then you drive to work the same way as you did the day before. You see the same people that push the same emotional buttons. You do the exact thing that you know how to do and you memorize and can do so well that you're an expert at. Then you hurry up and rush home so you can hurry up and check your emails, so you could hurry up and go to bed, so you can hurry up and do it all over again. Now, here's my question. Did your brain change at all that day? We could say that you were thinking the same thoughts, performing the same actions that create the same experiences that produce the same emotions, but secretly expecting something to change in your life. Would you agree? Yeah. So then, as the environment turns on different circuits in your brain, you begin to think equal to your environment. As you see the same people and go to the same places and do the same things at the same time, it's the external environment that's turning on different circuits in your brain, causing you to think equal to everything that you know. And as long as you think equal to everything that's familiar and known to you, what do you keep creating more of?
Same
life. Now, the quantum law is still applying to you. You're just thinking equal to everything that you know, and you keep creating more of the same. To truly change is to think greater than your environment. And every great person in history knew this.
So we need to think greater than our environment. What this means is that if the world has the capacity to alter you emotionally, then you are too vulnerable. In other words, you don't have dominion over your own state of being. If something can happen in your life that causes you to feel less than, or not enough, or not okay, or not safe, there's something missing in your spiritual maturity, because we have to have the capacity to be greater than what's happening in our environment. What's happening in the world, or what's happening in our families, or even in our bodies. We have to become greater than any condition. Otherwise, we become subjugated to those conditions. Can you see how that's important? But how do you become greater than your environment? How do you determine your own sense of well-being independent of what you're having? You see, that's a superpower, isn't it? To be able to determine how I'm going to be with whatever I'm having, regardless of how it looks or feels, that's what is our more spiritually mature place to be. And once we attain that capacity, can you not see how more effective you become in the presence of what's happening in your world, in your life? You become more effective if you have dominion over your own state of being in relationship to addressing the ills that we witness in our world. You become less effective if you attempt to address those very same conditions out of separation or out of lack or out of fear. So it's incumbent upon us, especially those who are part of the transformation transition team, that we have to manage our state of being, our state. And the challenge is that not only do we have difficulty knowing how to do that, but we have to do it in such a way as that we align with how our brain works, how our body-mind dynamic is, and principles that science enable us to understand helps us learn how to affect that. And so part of what we're about here at Healing Spiritual Center is learning the practices that enable us to have dominion over our state of being. And that's important, because not having that capacity means that we're like a thermometer rather than a thermostat. Remember when we used to use that metaphor, David? You know, in the old days we didn't have quantum science, but we had things, we had metaphors. We had the thermostat and we had the thermometer. But to be able to know that we can set our own sense of how we're going to be, but we have to know that not only we can do that, but we have to know that that's our spiritual work. That's the effort, is to establish ourselves in the context of what we know is the truth and manage our state by bringing that awareness into each subsequent moment, feeling our way into a desired future. And so the problem, as Dr. Joe points out, is that we re-cue up our old self every single day, and that we actually avoid running into our future self because we avoid the unknown. We avoid the unpredictable. We are so insatiable about having to have things be a certain way, and so dependent upon our well-being for that case, that we've lost the sense of childlike curiosity for the unknown, for the unexpected, for the unpredictable. And we have to recreate that if we were to step into a greater sense of our future. Now, here's another little short clip.
Now, your personality creates your personal reality. That's it. It's that simple. And your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So the present personality who's sitting here today, you, has created the present personal reality called your life. Would you agree? Would you also agree then, if you wanted to create a new personal reality, that on a fundamental level you would have to change the thoughts that you are thinking, the behaviors and habits that you're demonstrating, and the emotions that you've memorized that's become part of your identity? And most people try to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and it never works. We have to become somebody else. So then, as you keep thinking the same thoughts, performing the same actions, and living by the same experiences that produce the same emotions, there's a principle in neuroscience that says nerve cells that fire together wire together. And if you keep repeating the same states of mind and body over and over again, your brain begins to fire in the same sequences, in the same patterns, and same combinations. And whenever you make your brain work in a certain way, that's called mind. Mind is the brain in action. So as you remind yourself every day who you think you are, you're causing your brain to fire in the exact same ways. And as they fire and wire in the same patterns over time, the brain moves into a very finite signature, and that's called your personality.
So in so many ways, we have to overcome the habit of our old self, because it's also responsible for creating our present manner in which we look out at life and we make meaning. Our current self is a meaning-making machine. It perceives what's happening and makes meaning according to whatever beliefs and whatever aspects of our own awareness, however it makes sense of what's happening, that's what comes forth. And so if we don't recognize that we have to transform the dynamic of how we're taking in, how our life is showing up to the greater life, If we don't understand that we have to manage that part of the dynamic, that no amount of prayer is going to get God to change your belief system. No amount of prayer is going to get God to correct how we're using our attention and awareness. We have to do that ourselves. God empowers us to do that ourselves. And so this is a picture of another activity. Dr. Joe asked us to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, all 600 of us, go outside of the hotel, onto the riverfront. Columbia River is right there, downtown Portland. All 600 of us in walking meditation. And in the presence of downtown at 6 a.m., it was quite the spectacle for people to see. But yet, he was inviting us to walk into the world as our future self and to begin to imagine a state of being that's free from sense of not enough, free from debt, free from illness, free from whatever it is that we believe is holding us back from fulfilling our purpose and passion, to embody that. And so part of the challenge for us is that at some level we have to physically embody the felt sense of what that greater good is going to be for us. If we don't teach our body emotionally what it feels like to be more than enough, just having the thought that there's abundance out there is not going to counter-affect the part of us that still believes it's not enough. Can you see how that's so? We have to convince our body that we're more than enough. It's just insufficient just to think it. We have to train ourselves. And absent of spiritual practice, that doesn't happen. And so I'm running out of time. And what I wanted to end with is a kind of focus on meditation. And I haven't spoke to it. We haven't spoke specifically to meditation as a fundamental, primal practice, but it's important to us, and we will bring more information about that online. But suffice to say that Mary Teresa True is going to be conducting three meditation classes starting soon in the fall, all the way through the winter and the springtime. And our effort is to make sure that everyone in our community, if you have not had instruction with respect to meditation, that you receive this instruction in those classes. Because absent of a spiritual practice that engages in yourself is more real than the outer world. Remember, the outer world is effect, not cause. Until we engage in a practice that dives into the field that is cause, the internal field that is caused, we won't have the capacity to step outside of our old yesterday self. It's just as too difficult. And so however we manage, I'll end with this this picture, that part of the most difficult part of Dr. Joe's meditation experiences is not up at 4 a.m. and meditating for four and a half hours, not having a 15-hour day schedule and having to be on energetically the whole time. All of that was easy. The hard part is getting past yourself. The hard part is giving up your unworthiness. The hard part is giving up your sense of not enough. The hard part is setting down your complaining and your excuses and all the things that reasons why you can't, and get to a place where you can't anymore get away with your excuses. I've run out of time. How about you? God bless you.